Hare Krishna. Everyone please say, if your mouth's not full of food, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Krishna Krishna. Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Hare Rama. Rama Rama. Hare Hare. So that's mantra yoga. Yoga, there are several definitions. I'm supposed to be talking about karma and reincarnation. I'll get through to that. One definition of yoga is yoga indriya sanyamya, which means, yoga means to control the senses. So I request you to control the tongue by not talking while I'm talking, if you don't mind, because we're talking about some serious things here. We're happy and joyful, but we have serious topics to discuss. So I've been asked to talk about karma and reincarnation. You're doing this yoga, presumably, mostly you're coming for good health of the body. But of course, however healthy the body may be, it will die at some point, which most of you here are young students, and you don't think about that much, but really it's something we should all think about. It comes to everyone. Yogis, they can prolong their life to hundreds of years. I've personally seen yogis who must be several hundred years old, because you couldn't have such long hair. It takes time to grow that long. You can go and see them also if you want at the next Kumbh Mela. You can prolong the life, but the purpose of yoga is not to prolong the life, but to act in such a way that you don't get born again. Because everyone who is born has to die, and everyone who dies has to get born again. Now, you may think that's just some belief and it's not provable. In the modern age, we think that everything has to be provable by some scientific method. Well, actually, by the scientific method, there has been research, and if you actually want to approach it objectively, there is tremendous evidence to show that we do get born again. You could Google Ian Stevenson, who's also died now, but he spent his whole life doing research into this in a very scientific way. And it makes sense in so many ways. For every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. So, in the karmic sphere also, what we do, it comes around. Maybe not in this life, in another life. Why are some people born in a rich country, a rich family, good looking, and someone else is born in some miserable? Who wants to get their next life in Syria? Anyone? You'd like to be born in Syria right now? I don't think so. People get born in different situations, and different things happen to them. We don't know what's going to happen. Anytime, anything can happen. Why do different things happen to people? We say luck. But actually, there's all a big plan in the whole universe that we get what we deserve. Everyone gets what they deserve. In the human form of life, we have the opportunity to get out of this cycle of birth and death. It's only in the human form, because often people think that reincarnation means you always get a human birth, but not necessarily, because all living beings, they've come from a human situation at some point. But all living living means there's the soul is present in this body, the body that you're in. We're talking about death, but actually the body is already dead. However much you stretch it in yoga and feed it with organic food, the body is dead, because it's only chemicals. There's no life in chemicals. I'm not chemicals. Are you chemicals? Are you simply a bunch of carbon? Anyone study biology, medicine? What's in the body? Carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen. There's some gold there probably also. Plenty of lead in the modern age too. Not too much, I hope. Mercury, take it out of your teeth if you have it in. Nowadays they don't put it in. So the body is made of chemicals, but fortunately, I'm not chemicals, and nor are you. We're living beings. What gives life to these chemicals? The soul, yeah. That's why in every culture in the world, in every language, when someone dies, they say, he's gone away. In English, they say it. You probably have a few different language speakers here. I only know three languages. So in Hindi, they say, chale gaya. In Bengali, chale gaye. Anyone else? Up. Bengal. To chale geche. Then, what other language speakers do we have here? Anyone else? You're from? Telugu. So, how is it said in Telugu? Poyalu. Payaru. Poyaru. I never learned Telugu. I go to Andhra Pradesh. Now it's split. And also. So it's whatever it is, they say they've gone away. Yeah.
In Gujarati, you say
Gujigya. Gujigya. Nay, that means died, but gone away. Gone away. Huh? Vayagya. Vayagya. All right. Gujarati ma. Then, any other non-Indian languages? All Indians. Tamil. Poita, poitar, poitar, something like that. Another tough language. So anyway, whatever language of the world, do we have any non-Indian languages here? Any other non-Indian? Spanish. Same thing. Means gone away. In any language in the world. When someone dies, they say gone away. Who went away? What went away? The body is there. So what went? Who went? The same body that prior to the soul going away, if you did anything to it, if you tried to kill it or burn it or beat it, that same body, it would be a crime. But that same body, after it dies, if you don't burn it or bury it, that's a crime. What's the difference? The difference is the soul has gone away. We're all living beings. We all have feelings, emotions, desires, aspirations, ambitions, likes, dislikes. How's the prasadam, the food? Like. Okay. Who would like to eat crocodile kidneys? Anyone? Dislike. You like crocodile kidneys? No. All right. They'd like to eat your kidneys. No crocodiles in College Station, I hope. It's too dry here. Okay. So, what was I talking about? Likes and dislikes. Where does that come from? Does that come from the carbon or the hydrogen or the nitrogen or the lead? It comes from the soul, the living being. We're living beings. So we get body after body. Not necessarily that we get a human body. We can get a dog body or a cat body or a tree body or a snake body. They're all living beings. Chemicals, when we see chemicals, they develop as bodies with feelings, emotions. Animals also have emotions. Even trees have some kind of feelings and intelligence. That's because of the presence of the soul. Now you may say, well, how do you get an animal body? Well, if we act like an animal and think like an animal and desire like an animal, if we have the consciousness of a dog, woo, woo, get out of here. Then we get the body of a dog. If we're only interested in eat eating all kinds of horrible foods, and no, in human life, if we don't develop a higher consciousness, then we go down to the platform of lower consciousness. Human life is meant for understanding. There's reincarnation, karma. We have to get free from this. If we don't develop that higher consciousness, then we go to the animal platform. Human life is meant for understanding who we are, where we have come from, and where we should be going. So that's how reincarnation works. And karma, you get different. It's very, very complicated, because at every moment we're creating some karmic reaction. Karma literally means action. So when we say, I got my karma, it actually means we get the karmic reaction. At every moment we're doing something. At every moment we're thinking something. And it all creates some reaction. So it becomes extremely complex. But everyone is placed in a situation exactly according to their karmic reaction. So you may get the body of a dog, and you have so many desires, you have some dog-like desires, then you may have some desires like a snake. Actually, there was a survey done some years ago in Italy, asking people, if you get reincarnated, what you like to be. And the number one was, people said they'd like to be a snake. So I'm told. Any of you want to be a snake? Well, there are snake-like people. If you act like a snake, you'll get a body of a snake. That's how it works. And if we act in a godly way, then we can get a godly kind of body. But actually, to get a body means that we have to die. We have to suffer. You're doing yoga so to get better health. That means no one's in perfect health. Anyone in perfect health? There's no such thing as perfect health. No such thing. Because everyone's body has to deteriorate. If you look after the body and you have such good karma from a previous life, you can be pretty much disease-free. But at any point, in every body, it has to die at some point. So there's no such thing as perfect health. So we should understand this is miserable. This, in this material world, whatever situation it is, it's simply miserable, because we have to get born and die. We have so many hopes, which mostly they don't get fulfilled, and even if they're fulfilled, then again we get some more hopes and desires. We make friends, we lose them in course of time. The soul by nature is Satchidanandamai. This is technical terms. Those of you who are Indian hopefully have heard of it. I don't know. Nowadays, modern India. Sat means, that's one meaning. In the context in which it's generally used in Bhagavad Gita, it's mostly used to mean eternal. Nasato vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate sataha. This is the first time the word sat comes in Bhagavad Gita. Na asat. Na asataha. Vidyate bhavo. That which is asat never comes into being. Na bhavo vidyate sataha. And that which is, so that which is non-eternal, it doesn't actually exist, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. And that which is eternal, it actually has no relationship with this material world at all. So sat means that which is eternal, and that which is true, and that which is good. It has various meanings, but true in the sense that that which is eternal is actually true. We are souls, we are eternal. The body is not actually true, it's not actually meaningful, it's not actually real. It's real in the sense that a cloud is real. A cloud It's there and then it's gone. So it's real, but it's not a substantial reality. It only exists for a short time. So the body and everything in this world is temporary. Everything in this world is even this land of America. I'm talking about not the nation, but the land, the soil, the mountains. It will all, in course of time, it will cease to exist. Everything will cease to exist in this world. But we are eternal, living beings. That is our nature. And chit means we are conscious. And ananda means by nature we are full of joy. That is the nature of the soul, is that we are eternal, we are conscious, and we are full of joy, which is distinguished from matter, which is not eternal, not conscious, and it has neither joy nor lack of joy. It's inert. There's no joy in matter. So in this material world, we are souls, but we are in connection with matter, and we identify with this body, and we try to enjoy through this body, through the senses. Eating, copulation, hearing different things that we like to hear. This binds us in the material world. You might remember that the first thing I said is yoga indriya sanyamya. Yoga means to control the senses. Because we are trying to enjoy this world through the senses, through seeing, touching, tasting, smelling, feeling, hearing. But that binds us. We perform activities in this world that makes karmic reactions, and we have to get born again. So the purpose of yoga is to control the senses so that we don't make karmic reactions and we don't get born again. So that's it in brief. I was introduced as a bhakti yogi. Yoga, I said that one definition is there, yoga indriya sanyamya, to control the senses. Well, that's actually the means to attain yoga. Yoga, maybe you know there's a word in English which is not used much nowadays. It's a bit archaic. The word yolk. I'm not talking about egg yolk, but Y-O-K-E, which was not used nowadays because it was used when animals were used for transportation, draft animals, horses, bulls. So when you yoke the plow, a bull to a plow, that's called yoking, putting together. So yoga means to yoke, to put together. So the root meaning of yoga, to put together, means to put us together with the Supreme Soul. We are conscious living beings. There's this Supreme Conscious Living Being. And yoga means to link up. At the present time, we're not linked. We're falsely linked with everything in this material world, which causes us to be born again and again and die again and again. So yoga means to come to that consciousness of understanding that I don't belong here in this world. My existence is spiritual. I belong in the spiritual world. There is a spiritual world where everything is eternal and full of bliss. That's our nature. That's what we want, isn't it? Anyone want to die? No. Of course, some people do. They commit suicide. But that's just because they're so miserable. Intrinsically, no one wants to die. Everyone wants to be fully happy. But who is happy? Where is the happiness? Kim sukam martya dhaminam, as is stated in Sanskritam. Where is the happiness in the place of death? There can be no happiness, ultimate happiness. So the spiritual world is where there is no death, no old age, no disease, no need to do yoga exercises, because there's no ill health, just simply happiness. And what is that happiness? What is the highest happiness? The happiness is the happiness of love. Love means persons, not just some vague feeling. Love means person to person. In this material world, there's love, but not fully true, complete, perfect love. At least because it's broken by time. And often we find that love is, it's more like a, what's in it for me? You know about that? But real love means that you simply give your soul to that person. But how can, it's very dangerous love. You may have also found out. You give your soul to a person and you think they're fully reciprocating, but actually in this world no one can fully reciprocate. Bhakti yoga means the yoga of linking with the supreme loving person who reciprocates fully in a way which it's very difficult for us to even imagine. As long as we're in this world, in this very sankuchita, what's that mean? Closed up, constricted consciousness. Thank you. Our consciousness is very closed up, constricted. When we fully develop consciousness of who we are, who everyone is, what supreme love is, then we can fully give ourselves full trust. And that love is the highest happiness, which we're all looking for. Bhakti yoga concentrates on that. And that's why we're chanting Hare Krishna. Because Krishna is that person who is supremely loving, who we are to link with. If we link with Krishna by bhakti yoga, bhakti yoga means the yoga of devotion. And although the word yoga in America is so intimately linked with exercises, it has actually nothing to do with this at all. Because the exercises are only part of another system of yoga, actually a lower system, which is just, it's only meant to make the body in a certain state so that one can do meditation. It's only a preliminary. To get the body healthy is not the actual goal, it's just something preliminary. So that the body can be in a certain state for meditation. But meditation is only neutral. Whereas bhakti, devotion, is active. Love doesn't mean just looking at someone and saying, I love you. Okay. I love you. Okay. It's active. Activity. Offering things. Doing things. Doing things together. So in the spiritual world with Krishna, there's laughing, singing, joking, dancing, eating. Because it's people, we're souls, interaction. Oh, it's supposed to be interactive, you said. Yeah? Well, everyone's listening very nicely. Thank you for that. I suppose we should have some interactive. So, yeah, bhakti yoga means the yoga of devotion. When we go to the spiritual world, we don't have to come back to this material world because there are no... Why do we come to this material world? Because of personal desires, material desires. I want this, I want that. And also because we do things for which we have to get reactions. If you punch someone in the face, you have to get a reaction for that. You might get it immediately. Or you might get it in the next lifetime. Or you might get it the next day or whatever. If you give someone some money in charity, you also get a reaction for that. If you do something bad, you get a reaction. If you do something good, you get a reaction. So, if we're to get free from this material world, then we have to stop getting reactions. Now, those of you of any knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, which is the Yoga Shastra, the discussion of yoga, different kinds of yoga, karma yoga, the yoga of material action, or action in this material world. Then main ones are karma yoga, jnana yoga, the yoga of knowledge, dhyana yoga, the yoga of meditation, and bhakti yoga, the yoga of devotion. And there are so many other, within these four main categories, there are so many other different divisions. This exercise yoga is derived from, I wouldn't even say it's really yoga at all, but you can say it's derived from hatha yoga, which the yoga of breath. It's actually meant for breathing. So the whole plot of the Bhagavad Gita is that Arjuna, who's the disciple, and Krishna, who's the guru, Arjuna thinks that I have to stop all work. I have to stop all action. But Krishna told him, no, that's wrong. You got the wrong idea there. You have to act in such a way that you are linked with the Supreme. Yoga yukto bhava Arjuna. Arjuna, you become linked in yoga with the Supreme through action. Anyway, it's a very big topic. One thing I think you can understand, that apart from the exercise, which I'm not saying they're bad, I also do yoga exercises for the health of the body. But there's a great culture and a great philosophy and a great spiritual understanding behind it. And simply, if we only do it for the benefit of the body, we're really missing a lot. So this spiritual culture, sometimes we say Indian culture, although that which is spiritual is not Indian or American. Spirit is everywhere. Although it's been, this culture has been prominent traditionally in India. So that culture is based on the understanding that we are spiritual living beings, and the purpose of life is not simply to live in this world and try and be happy in this world, but to get free from this world. And the best way is bhakti yoga. I'm saying that not just, well, everyone may say my path is the best. But according to the most prominent or most accepted treatise on yoga, Bhagavad Gita, when Krishna, who is known as, addressed in Bhagavad Gita as Yogeshwara, or the master of yoga, he himself states that of all kinds of yoga, the best method is that of devotion. And it's actually very practical and suitable. It's very easy for everyone and very effective. So, interactive. I was supposed to have questions here. There's so much to discuss. The first thing to understand is that the body is temporary. I am eternal. I am not the body. You are not the body. The body changes. The body dies. But I, the soul, continue to exist throughout the life of this body and afterwards also. So what's our real self-interest? Our real self, everyone's interested in themselves, right? Isn't it? It's axiomatic. So what is our real self-interest or our best self-interest? We should consider not only in terms of this very short life, but in consideration of eternity. This human life which we have, very short, but we have the opportunity to get free from birth and death in this life. On the other hand, if we don't understand these points, and if we simply live without thinking about it, then we have to go on getting born and dying again and again and again. And we might think, well, that's okay. I don't mind. But it's not a good proposition. To get born and die again and again and again means simply suffering again and again and again. Maybe in college station in Texas, the karmic situation overall is somewhat better than in other parts of the world. I just mentioned Syria. But people also die here. They also, people suffer. From all over the world, people want to come to America. I think most of who's present here is not born in America, is it? Mostly not. So people want to come here. They think life will be wonderful here, but people are suffering here. Maybe not economically so much, although there are plenty of beggars in America also now, but mentally people are suffering. There's this word Prozac. Everyone knows the word Prozac, right? Is it? You all know the word Prozac? It's like aspirin or something. People use it, some antidepressant drug. Why should the name of an antidepressant pharmaceutical be a household word? It means a lot of people are depressed. So, I'm just making the point that even in this country, which is supposed to be the place where everyone wants to come to, because it's supposed to be the best country, the best place, people are suffering. So what to speak of other places? Everywhere there's suffering. How to get free from suffering? Well, that is the yoga mission. Link up with Krishna by chanting his names. That's the simple answer. If you just accept it, you can chant Hare Krishna and be happy. If not, well, there's lots of explanation, lots of philosophy. It's not just some vague belief. There's a lot of knowledge behind it. Yes, so does anyone want to say anything? Any questions? Or protests? You don't like what I said? That's all. Can do also if you want. Anything? Any thoughts? Yes, please. Now you see, anything can happen anytime, big or small. You don't know what's going to happen. Maybe better keep your hand down. You have some yogic power you're not aware of. Why is there so much suffering in the world? That's a very important question, isn't it? It's not just a question out of curiosity. That's a major question. Do any of you study that in your university courses? What's the main topics here? What are you all studying? Agriculture. Nowadays you have to go to a university to study agriculture. Previously people, they just did it. It's become more complex nowadays with all the chemicals. But this is what should be, this should be the topic of discussion, isn't it? Yeah, shut up. See if I have enough yogic power to keep it down. Why is there so much suffering in the world? Excuse me. If love is the love is all. Why we all want happiness. Why is there suffering? That is the question that everyone should ask and find the answer. What is the answer? We are meant for being joyful. What is joy? Joy is love. What do you think? Is there any joy in... Just like, for instance, let's see. Now, if you're given an offer, okay, as much money as you want, big car, big house, but no people, no one, no, not even a dog. Just you. That would be miserable, wouldn't it? Solitary confinement. If you had solitary confinement in a 5-star hotel, it would still be miserable. So, our nature is to love, and love means people, but love also means that it is voluntary. It has to come from the heart. So we are meant for loving Krishna, the Supreme Soul. If you want, you can say God, but the word God is such a misunderstood, a misused word that I'm a little reluctant to use it. So let's say the Supreme Soul. We are meant for loving Him, Radha and Krishna, Him and her. But that has to be voluntary. And that means we have the choice. And if we choose, choice means there's the possibility to misuse that choice. So if we misuse that, and we instead think, I want to enjoy myself, if we put ourself at the center. Love means not putting ourself in the center, giving ourself. But if we want to put ourself in the center, then we come to this material world, which is a place where those who don't want to, they've chosen in a different way, they come here. So love gets perverted into envy, dislike, exploitation. Everyone wants, I want. All other people are meant for serving me, directly or indirectly. We have this consciousness. So everyone is trying to exploit everyone else. So we inflict misery on others, they inflict it on us, we get our karmic reactions, and thus the suffering goes on. It all comes from misuse of the choice to love or not love. That's the answer. Anything else? Thank you for that question. I don't know if you accepted the answer, but I don't know if you'll get a better answer. But seeking the answer to that question is more important than anything else we can do, isn't it? What do you think? You can try and alleviate suffering, but actually it doesn't happen. Just like in recent times, the most famous person who dedicated her life to alleviating suffering was Mother Teresa of Calcutta. But there's still plenty of suffering in Calcutta and everywhere else. And even when she was there, there was plenty of suffering. So how much can you do? What can you do? Alleviating suffering, actually she had this program that her helpers would go out and find people dying on the street and bring them to her home. That means they live their whole life on the street and then they die in her home. So it doesn't, not really very helpful. But after they die, they have to get born again. So it's not really helping them very much. So real alleviating suffering is to give people the knowledge and the process by which they can get free from suffering eternally. And even alleviating suffering, just like there are so many refugees now who are trying to come to Europe, and the idea is that, well, life will be better in Europe than it will be in wherever they're coming from. But it's not that they're going to be free of suffering. Maybe the suffering won't be as gross as in their situation they were in previously. Actually, some years ago, the LSE, London School of Economics, they did a world happiness survey. They interviewed people in different countries all over the world to find in which people, the mental state of happiness. Not talking about how much money you have or what job security. They found the number one happy country in the world was Bangladesh. Maybe one reason for that is because at least at that time there was, well, even now, there's not much financial or any other kind of security. And for most people, and families hold together strongly. Everyone's religious. I lived in Bangladesh for several years, and I didn't find one atheist, ever. Either. Unless you want to call Buddhists atheists. Technically, it is atheism. Everyone's very religious. So, if you want to alleviate suffering, that's one way. In this world, give people religious consciousness. If we can help people to understand how to come to a situation by which they can be eternally benefited, that is the best alleviation of suffering. Just like even welfare workers, they find that they have the idea that better than feeding people is to give them the means by which they can feed themselves. To either train them in farming techniques or whatever. So the idea is that just try, rather than alleviating some immediate suffering, if you can give them the knowledge and the facilities by which they can help themselves in the long term, that's better. So if we can give people the knowledge and the process by which they can become freed from suffering eternally, oh, that is the best welfare work. So yeah, we can live in this world to try to help others, but first we have to know how to help them. How to help them in the best possible way. There is help in giving food to hungry people, no doubt. But they'll be hungry again shortly afterward. And then they'll die and get born again. So how to give them the knowledge by which they can be free from suffering eternally. That is the best way to help. Yes, please.
So when you say that, you know, we are not meant to like the material thing in the world, my question is, does that mean we're not meant to love or enjoy the things that are already in our life, not regarding material things like money, cars?
Money, cars, material. But everything is material in this world. Relationships are material if the basis is simply how we can cooperate to try and enjoy this material world. That's a material relationship. Better than a gross material relationship is just based on mutual enjoyment. That's why we find in the modern age people, they love each other, they might even get married, and then they divorce. Because when they find that, well, the magic's gone, that means the happiness or the pleasure they got from the other person, it's not the... And it's like that. Material relationships are like that. It's just the way that this material world is set up, that you feel attracted to something or someone, and then you get fed up of it. So, better than that is marriage on the basis of responsibility. The responsibility comes first, and the love is based on that. Whereas in Indian culture, as it used to be, a boy and a girl would get married. They wouldn't even see each other before the marriage. They wouldn't, which means they didn't know each other. But the marriage is worked out. Why? Because it was on the basis of responsibility. The man has a duty to the wife. The wife has a duty to the husband. They both have a duty to the elders. They have a duty to the children. And it works. And then because they're working together to discharge that responsibility, then the love develops automatically. So that's a better standard. But pure love means centered on Krishna with no selfish motive. And people can love each other within this world if they have that selfless motive, if it's centered on Krishna. So we're not saying that stop all relationships, but relationships which are simply based on the illusion of trying to be happy in this world, then it's that will bind us in this world. Yes, please. Okay, you disagree. You're quite welcome to disagree, as this is America after all. But one thing is, you have your opinion. Everyone has their opinion. But we should try to understand what is actually the fact also. There, what is actually real is not dependent on what you agree with or what I agree with or disagree with. So we should try to understand what the fact is. Anyone what? Sorry? Anyone? I didn't hear that.
Game of Thrones.
Thrones. Game of Thrones. I really stepped on a bombshell here, talking about male-female relationships. Yeah, I'm talking about the ideal, which can work if it's done properly. It was used as an example.
Yeah, I guess, but like, I feel like you don't truly want to be with someone. Like, divorce is really hard. You know, optimal in that situation, right?
Divorce shouldn't happen, though. Yeah. Now, we're talking about social matters here. But divorce is child abuse if you have children. Yeah, yeah. So in Indian culture, you're going to hate me saying this, but the wife is submissive to the husband, theoretically. You do hate me now. Okay. Someone has to submit.
I'm a feminist.
Okay, well, okay, we get into the feminist discussion. But before we get... All right, I probably shouldn't have chosen that example because it's usually very much misunderstood. The reason for that is because the culture is based on the understanding that human life is ultimately meant for God realization and not for immediate personal gratification. That is the reason. And that is the reason why responsibility is there. Accept your lot, as my one of my uncles in Ireland used to say. That okay, we're in this situation, and anyway, we have to live this life, so let's lead it amicably somehow or other. It's very difficult for people in this modern world in America to understand this at all, because the whole culture from the very beginning of life is just based on sense gratification. What? How can at every moment I have to look in my iPhone and get something and put something in, drink some Pepsi or something, or hear something? It's all at every moment how I can enjoy my senses. But actually, a better culture is that which is based on knowledge of the purpose of life, higher culture, that we're with a vision of eternity. I'm not just here for this short life. This life is not just for me to try to enjoy, but to come to a higher, purified consciousness. So responsibility, it's not just on the basis of how we live together in this life, but with a vision of the future also, and a vision that I got this situation due to my previous karmas, and I have to act in a way that I don't keep on creating karma more and more and more. So it's all meant for self. It's all meant for yoga, for self-purification. But like I say, it's very difficult for people who are raised in a culture which is simply based on what's in it for me. Very difficult to understand. Yes, please. My opinion, I would let me clarify, my opinion has absolutely no value whatsoever.
What's your
nor is your opinion, nor is anyone's opinion, because we have to know. What is your opinion? My opinion is 2 plus 2 equals 5. Okay, it's a free country. Does it have any value? So we may have our opinion, but we should try to understand what is the reality, what is the fact.
If the opinion comes from a person who's more educated or who deals with that particular issue, I think that opinion has got a greater value or a greater impact in society.
Yeah, but my point is that whatever the opinion it may be, but even someone's opinion may be more valued than others. We talk about experts' opinion.
But
there, what is the fact? That's more important than anyone's opinion. Whatever the issue. Yeah, okay, please.
How do I
understand you're asking politely, but I'm just clarifying. Even the language we speak, it's all loaded with so many preconceptions.
How would you define a good karma? Because karma, essentially, as the Mahabharata, Bhagavad Gita says, from those things,
yeah,
it has come to the thing that you have to do your duty.
You have to do your duty, yeah.
That is primal. You have to do the karma.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day...
When we say good karma, the word karma in modern English is a mixed-up term. Because the word karma means action, but it's usually used for what is actually karma phal, which means the result of the action. In modern American English, the word karma it should be karma phal, which means the result of the action, and karma means the action. So the result of a good karmic reaction is. There are four things which are usually mentioned. That means Janmaishvarya Shuta Shri. Janma, birth in a good family. Aishvarya means wealth. Shuta means learning, intelligence. And Shri means bodily beauty. In this context, Shri means bodily beauty. So if you have these things, and we often find they go together. You don't usually find someone born in a wealthy family, they're very ugly. Of course, you may say it's all subjective, but what is considered beautiful? So, yeah, these are the four things. If birth in a situation which is considered high class, wealth, learning, and bodily beauty. We may include in that also bodily health.
But does that mean that we don't have the position to really do the things that is right, or we are born with that inherent?
We're born in different situations. A high birth from the spiritual point of view, the best birth is that in which we have the opportunity to cultivate spiritual knowledge. It's not there in every birth. If someone is born, for instance, in a culture which doesn't have any, the culture is not one of cultivating spiritual knowledge, or if one is born in a situation where people just live very gross lives, sinful lives, then the opportunity for spiritual advancement is very low. But if one is born in a culture where from the beginning of life one understands or one is given the knowledge and education that human life is meant for yoga, for God realization, so that's a better opportunity. Some births, human births, they may be not much higher than an animal birth, actually, because there's no cultivation of spiritual knowledge. It may be even in a very rich country like America. But if people are simply eating, sleeping, having sex, and looking in their iPhones, then, that's the difference between a human and an animal. The only difference is a human has an iPhone. Otherwise, their business is how to enjoy their genitals and not much else. Yes, please. Is that all right? Okay.
Part of when you said earlier that the love is based upon mutual responsibility. If the responsibility is mutual, then why wouldn't the relationship itself be mutual? The love itself mutual.
Mutual, yes. Mutual, yes, but there's a different role to play. Do we have that book here, Women Masters or Mothers? We don't have that. I wrote a book about this. Different roles to play. Oh, that's a big topic. One thing is, the female body is meant for having children, right? Okay, we're just talking about the general case. There may be exceptions. There may be exceptions. They're more common in the modern age. But previously it wasn't very common. Now it's common. Maybe because of genetically modified foods or whatever. But it was uncommon previously that women would be biologically unable to have children. So the female body is meant for having children. And the female psychology traditionally has always been like that. Wanting to have children. Generally, young girls, if they're not trained otherwise, they like to have dolls and treat them like babies. In traditional cultures, which I have lived in, where the influence of Western society is not there, you see that girls from about all the young ladies here are looking as amazed that I could even be saying these things. but you see girls from about the age of 5 or 6, they pick up little babies and they naturally like to mother, to act like a mother to them.
Hmm?
Not natural.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm getting through to that. If you just give me a little time to try and explain it. So, that is the... On the material platform, that is the desire that goes with the body. The desire to have children. To take pleasure in looking after children. Suckling children. That requires that the female is with the children most of the time, whereas she has a home role, and the male has a more outgoing role. The woman's role is giving selfless love to the children. The male role is disciplining. So that's why. But it's a general stereotype. But the women, in a different way, in a subtle way, they actually control. That's the more cultured way of doing things. In a subtle, that by her service and to the husband, she pleases him so much. He just does everything for her, whatever she wants. That's in cultured society.
Maharaj, can I answer with one line?
Yeah.
In Hindu religion, they say women is Ardhanarishwar. Ardhanarishwar means she is half of a male. And Hindu religion per se, I don't think it ever considers woman to be in a submissive position. Goddess Durga, she's one of the goddesses.
Submissiveness is there.
She was actually given the power by the men to fight the demon because the men were not capable. So if the men could hand over power to a woman to go and do the battle, you can imagine that the status of women is considered to be the supreme.
But actually, this whole discussion, I know you think it's very important, but it's less important. It's not the main thing. Feminism, non-feminism, it's not the most important thing. Because you're only in a female body now. In your next life and your previous life, you may be in a male body. No, but the point... The point is that the way society is organized, relationships between male and female, That is not the main point. The first point we have to understand is what is the purpose of human life. And on the basis of that, social adjustments are made. There's no real point to discuss it at all if we're only just thinking that this life is all in all. And then when we die, it's all finished. It's a platform of ignorance of our spiritual identity. This culture, which has that traditional culture, is based on spiritual understanding of the purpose of life, getting free from birth and death. Whereas this modern society is simply based on eat, drink, sleep, be merry and enjoy, for tomorrow we shall all be dead. It's a foolish culture, actually. So without understanding that, I can't try to make you understand why I should advocate what to you seems to be a draconian system of repression, if you can't understand the reason behind it is that human life is meant for God realization. And on the basis of that, society is organized. Again, you agree, I disagree, but we should try to understand what is the reality. You may think, but what is reality? What is the fact? I'm not talking here about social roles and this and that. What is the essence of existence? This thing we should understand first. Otherwise, we're talking from just on the platform of the mind about. We're tiny little beings in a massive universe. We're just here for a short time. We don't know why we're here, how we got here, where we're going. We don't know. We want to be happy. We don't know how to be happy. We don't know anything. I mean, we don't know anything of anything real importance. And social roles is important, but it's a secondary consideration. First of all, we should understand our compass, where we're going. What's terminology got to do with it?
The word submissive is what started this discussion. The terminology for the roles of genders. And why should
it matter? Gender is something temporary. Try to understand the eternal first. Well, all right. Okay, if you're a religious person, but then, I'm not talking about religion per se, but what is the fact? You are a living being, right? So what's living about you? Is it your body?
I don't know if there's a disconnect between my mind and my soul.
You say my, but who are you? You say my mind, my soul.
I know what my situation is here in the real world. I don't know anything after.
But who are you? Are you the body? Are you the mind? Who are you?
I mean,
do you know? Do you know who you are? Do you know who you are?
Yeah.
Are you the body?
No, I'm the combination of both my body and my mind.
You're the combination of your body and your mind, but the body will die.
Yeah, but you're saying that your soul will continue.
The soul is what makes the body. The soul is what makes the body alive. The body is only chemicals. The body is only chemicals. You're not the body. Are you chemicals? Are you chemicals?
I mean, I feel like that's your opinion.
But are you chemicals?
Scientifically,
you are chemicals. Then why bother at all? Why bother discussing all these things at all if you're just chemicals? What do chemicals care about anything? I'm just saying this theoretically. If someone was to come and cut your head off, which might happen if you go out to Syria or somewhere like that. You wouldn't like that, would you? No, of course you wouldn't. But why should you be bothered? If it's only chemicals, some chemicals were joined together, now they're not joined together. So why should you be bothered about that? It's only chemicals. No, but why? Why? What's wrong with that? If I, okay, I'll take this off, throw it away. So what? It's just, what does it matter? It's just some matter. So the body's only matter, it's only chemicals. So if someone is to chop your head off and throw it away, why should you bother? It's only chemicals. You are more than chemicals. If you can learn that, then you can start to understand and live your life in a way that is more than simply trying to make the body and mind satisfied, but you're more than the body and the mind. That is the meaning of the soul. That is the real you. Without understanding that, then nothing is understood.
I guess the body is that the soul is separated.
We're over time. Oh, we have to vacate the hall? Oh, I see. Well, there you go. Time is ticking away. We have to vacate the hall. But these are very important questions. Please think about it. Hare Krishna.